Happy summer, and thanks so much for joining us for this latest edition of Cleveland Browns Weekend right here on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. I'm Vic Carucci, and we have a full hour of Browns and NFL discussion for you. Training camp is scheduled to open in a little more than a month, and this show will give you what you need to be thinking about in the meantime. You're going to hear from the head coach of the Browns, Rob Chudzinski, who will offer his thoughts on the team's offseason and also explain what went into establishing his schedule for training camp, which begins on July 25th. Bernie Kosar and I will drill into the wide receiver position on the Browns, taking a look at the type of impact newcomer David Nelson might be able to make once he returns to action from knee surgery. You'll also hear from Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. We're going to focus on the defense, which has two spots that figure to be where the most competition will be for starting jobs, cornerback and safety. Former Browns cornerback Frank Minifield is going to join us. We'll talk about his role as a board member of the Blanton Collier Sportsmanship Group. Now, besides their Browns connection, Minifield and the former coach who led the Browns to their last championship in 1964 are both from Kentucky. Minifield also has plenty of opinions about the way cornerback is played and coached in the NFL today. And next month, the cameras from the HBO series Hard Knocks will be focused on the training camp of one of the Browns' division rivals, the Cincinnati Bengals. Joe Reedy, who covers that team for the Cincinnati Inquirer, will be with us to talk about the impact of all of that attention. That's coming up on Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. And let's get things started this morning with our conversation with Browns head coach Rob Chudzinski.
Let's talk first of all about the offseason and your biggest takeaways from what this team did through OTAs and through minicamp.
I was really pleased with the group. I think the biggest thing that stood out to me was that this is a hungry group. They're very accepting of coaching. They want to be good and hungry to do the things that it takes. And, you know, it's just a matter of us getting to know them and being involved on a day-to-day basis with them and pointing them in that direction.
And, of course, the news that came out right at the end of this was Josh Gordon being suspended for the first two games of the regular season for violating the league's substance policy. Now, I know under league rule, you're not allowed to comment on any of the specifics of this, but you're also not allowed to know any of those specifics. So I won't go there, but I want to ask you, what is the plan with the receivers going forward?
Well, I feel confident with the group based on what we had a chance to see in the spring that we'll move forward. And, you know, a guy like Devon Bess and Greg Little and Travis Benjamin, some of the things we saw to him, and then David Nelson getting him back for training camp, and we'll move forward. And it's really no different than what you have to deal with during the course of the season in terms of, you know, guys being out and not being available for different games. I'm confident that the rest of the group will pick it up.
Were you mostly encouraged by the performance of that receiver group, Josh Gordon included, through these offseason workouts?
It's the offseason is a time for those guys to really shine. There's not a lot of contact out there, no contact to speak of, and you know, no press coverage and those types of things. So it's a definite advantage for the receivers and for the offense for those guys. And so it was good to see them. They picked things up well. It's a young group that's still learning, and the addition of Devon was great. You know, his leadership showed from right away.
And when we looked at that group catching passes, we certainly focused on the quarterbacks throwing the ball. And it looked as if, for the most part, Brandon Whedon was grasping what he needed to in this offense. But he faces a pretty serious challenge because he's learning a new scheme and he's learning it from different coaches.
Sure. That's for young quarterbacks going through, you know, him in particular having to learn two systems in 2 years. He's done a real nice job of picking those things up and being able to apply them on the field and gain a good understanding of what we're trying to do. You know, the next step will be in getting out in training camp when there's, you know, the pads are on and you know, things are going to happen a little bit quicker, and then obviously getting into the preseason games.
And as far as the quarterbacking picture goes, determining who the starter's going to be, what's the timetable on that? I know you were asked about that at minicamp. Is it more clarified now as you get closer to training camp, or how are you approaching that?
Well, the approach will be we'll have a starter by the first game, and that's the timetable that I know will happen. And in my experiences, in the past, typically it plays itself out and you're able to assess and find that out sooner. But I promise we'll have a starting quarterback name by the time our first game comes around.
You went through full installation of your offense and your defense through the off season. Is that pretty much what's going to be in place from the types of plays you run and so forth during the course of training camp, or is there more install to go there?
We've installed most of the offense so far, and most of the defense and the special teams. What the layout of the training camp will be, will on a day-to-day basis, will feature an installation that we'll get a chance to meet in the morning on, and then walk through mid-morning, and then we'll come back, meet again, and go out and practice late afternoon, early evening, and then we'll have a chance to meet again in the evening to watch that practice.
What's your experience been with players retaining kind of what they've been fed? As you say, most of it has been put in place during these off-season workouts, and then by the time they get to training camp, there's like whatever, a six-week, something like that gap between the last time they're on a practice field to training camp. The retention and how do you deal with that? How much? What's your expectation of how these guys are going to retain?
Well, I expect them to. We need to come into training camp, and it can't be something where we're playing catch-up from inactivity from the past. And, those days are over. Most of the guys will be working on and looking at their playbooks. They were able to have those when we broke. I expect them to come in ready to go, and we're playing catch up. We have a short time to get ready and to put everything in, going back to the spring, April 1st, when we first had a chance to get with the guys. So we need to, that mental part of it's going to be important.
Rob Chudzinski, head coach of the Browns, joining us. Trent Richardson did not take part in the latter part of OTAs or minicamp. Had that issue with his lower leg, and you said and he said that he'd be ready by the start of training camp. Are you still confident that he'll be ready to hit the field come July 25th?
Yeah, that's my expectation.
And with regard to the need to have him out there and how important it is, did he lose a lot of time, in the course of the offseason, when he wasn't participating, that there's ground that he needs to make up once he's out there in training camp?
Well, just from a standpoint of being on the field and actually going through the plays and going through and the execution of those plays, he stayed into it mentally. I was pleased from that standpoint. He was really working at it, and any of the walkthroughs and those type of things that we did, he was out there and participating in those fully. So it's just a matter of him coming into camp, in good condition, which is what that rest we felt like would allow him to do, and then getting out there and getting a chance to execute and go do what he's been doing his whole life, which is running the ball.
As you mentioned, the off-season workouts are really a time when receivers get to flourish because it is so much a pitch and catch fest. But you are trying to look at, see, and evaluate what the defenders are able to do and how much they're able to grasp a new defense. And it seemed by and large that for the most part, that it looked like this group was getting what they were being taught by Ray Horton and the rest of that staff. How pleased were you by how the defense functioned, at least through those drills?
Very much so. And I think overall, you talk about Ray and the whole staff, the defensive staff. You watch out there, then those guys look like they've been working together for years. And I think it's a credit to Ray and the job he's done in assimilating and getting everybody together on the same page. As far as the defense goes, I was really pleased with their understanding and the progress that they made as a group. And you talk about some guys that, had to make some conversion from specifically a guy like Jabal, who went from a defensive end to a stand-up outside backer, and the progress he made. And looking at Kiki Mingo and some other guys on the defense that came in as free agents as well, all coming together. So I think it was a heck of a job done by the staff, and we'll need more of that going forward in training camp. And, really, training camp's a time where you start assessing and working the physical part of football. A lot of this was the mental part up till now, and now we get a chance to get out and get the pads on and go hit a little bit.
And there's some competition, right? I know – We've talked about it on the offensive side, that quarterback itself is not something that you have officially nailed down. Maybe, you know, we'll see how it progresses with Brandon Whedon. But the on the offensive side of the ball, maybe that guard spot or the guard spots in general are something to look at with Jason Pinkston coming back from that blood clot. John Greco is in there. You got Sean LaValle in there. I'm thinking you seek some competition in the interior offensive line.
Yeah, we will. When we get a chance to get out there, we'll see. I think Pink going through the spring and just coming back, getting a feel for playing. He was a little bit rusty. I think this was good. So I expect all those guys full speed and full go and competing for those two spots.
And on the defensive side, the competition focus is at corner opposite the Joe Hayden spot. So seeing Buster Skrine and Leon McFadden and Chris Owens among the group competing there, free safety being a spot that's competitive, and you've had Tashawn Gibson in there working with the ones through the offseason, but there's some other people that Johnson Batamosi among others, and we're going to see how Jamore Slaughter comes back from his Achilles injury. And then you've got a kicking competition, both place kicker, punter, and a return competition. So there's a lot of places that your eyes are going to be focused on through the summer.
There is a lot of spots to be won, and that's where, you know, training camp is. That's a fun part of coaching and football, is, you know, seeing guys develop and put them in those spots, and they'll give them the opportunities to show what they can do, and then formulate a team from there.
Will it make for a different kind of atmosphere, and did it already do so through the off-season workouts, when you know there are fewer people, say, than a previous year, who were sensing, I don't know if the word is entitlement, but certainly sensing that, hey, I got a job locked up here. There's a lot less of that going on this summer.
Well, competition is always a good thing. It makes us all better. And, the good thing that we have is a group that's supportive of each other at the same time. And, you know, building the team concept at the same time of having a competitive environment where guys can really work, you know, and compete with and against each other is what you're trying. And I think, you know, we're hopefully headed along that way.
And the other thing that stood out about your camp schedule is late afternoon practices going from 4 p.m. To 6:30 on those days. And I think with the exception of maybe a couple of early orientation practices, all of these will be contact workouts under the rules of the collective bargaining agreement, the numbers that you can have to do that, like 14 or so. Why did you design it to have such later starts for practices?
As I mentioned before, the layout of the day really is designed for that particular install or those things that we're doing and focusing on in that particular day. So in the mornings, we'll meet and install what we're going to be doing for practice. We'll go out and walk through it prior to being, you know, going out and practicing, and then we'll come back and review the walkthrough and talk about any last minute things that we'll do for practice. And then we will watch the film of practice that evening. So really each day is laid out so that it's a learning standpoint. Everything you're doing is geared towards that practice that day, and then finally reviewing it afterwards.
So a factor like just keeping them out of the heat or whatever in the summer, is that thought process go into it at all?
The later afternoon is a help with that. It really, all the places I've been have different challenges in terms of that, certainly in Cleveland, the weather's not real predictable. So, these guys are in great condition. Hopefully we'll get some great days out there and great opportunities to get out where we don't get rained out or those type of things, where we can get outside and get done what we need to get done.
Coach, thank you very much.
Thanks, Vic.
This is Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
We welcome in Bernie Kosar for his regular spot on this show. And Bernie, let's talk about the wide receivers, and not because of Josh Gordon's suspension. I know that's been hammered to death. I want to take it more in the direction of what else we can see emerge with or without Gordon in the lineup. And the thing that I keep coming back to, the thing that really gets me fired up about training camp, is watching finally David Nelson take the field, come back from that, you know, knee injury, that knee surgery that he had, and be able to show us what a 6'5" target he could be.
Well, I think we talked last week about the really need for a formations, the multiple personnel groups, even more so today.
Right.
If you get Jordan Cameron healthy at his size and David Nelson, who years ago I think was under Urban Meyer at the University of Florida, they used him in all kinds of creative ways to really showcase his athleticism. So a guy like that coming off an ACL injury, which years ago was a serious injury with the upgrades and medicine and stuff, that is something now. He's had enough time pass and enough physical therapy to pass where he should be at his peak condition. So using those different personnel groupings with a guy like David Nelson, who is coming out of his fourth year from Buffalo as a free agent and coming off the ACL, being 6'5", having that athleticism. I think he was a quarterback in high school, being a little biased, but I think he'll have a good overall understanding of the game. He could be a guy that's used in different personnel groupings, in different formations, and definitely you could create some mismatches with his size and speed over some of the defensive backs.
Yeah, that's the thing that stands out when you watch tape of this guy, is there really never seems to be a good way for a defense to cover him. And he's always, regardless of the type of pattern he's running, he's always obviously utilizing not only that advantage in height, but really good body control, good jumping ability, and he runs really good routes. I mean, that's the guy that I got used to seeing in that time in Buffalo, and he was the specialist. I mean, he wasn't like their number one person, but he was their person who could do some things, especially when others were drawing coverage attention, like Stevie Johnson and so forth. So, with the Browns, the equivalent I'm thinking is obviously once Gordon is out there and playing, but also with Greg Little, also with Devon Bess, and I'm thinking when those other people do their thing, it seems natural for David Nelson to be involved and be the guy who's open for the big play. I mean, I'm thinking especially red zone, especially goal line plays. He's going to be someone that will almost always be there as an option for Brandon Weeden to hit in the end zone.
Well, I do think the model has been set over the last few years by watching Aaron Hernandez and Kronk in New England, seeing two big, strong, fast, tight end types, receiver types, putting duress on the secondary. You almost always will find or be able to find a mismatch when you put two and three bigger tight ends and receivers out there. The defensive backs in this league just don't go across the board big enough, strong enough, and fast enough to match up when you put two or three guys in there that are 6'5", 260, running a 4.55, and that's not even counting Greg Little at 60.5, 220,
right,
running a 4.4.
Right, right. Yeah, that's an addition to, exactly. Bernie, thank you so much, and we'll catch up with you again soon, my friend.
Sounds good.
Mary Kay Cabot, she covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. So, Mary Kay, in the course of these next 6 weeks or so, as we await the start of training camp, yeah, it's that lull period, but it's also a time where so many of us are kind of thinking about the primary storylines that are going to carry into training camp and what we're going to focus on. And there's really quite a few. I think it's the defensive side of the ball where so much of the conversation is going to flow in terms of how different this looks and how much better it can be. I sense a perception that, yes, the defense was pretty solid before, and why, with the change of it all, why and what could be expected to make it better. And, I've had a couple of people reach out to me and say, did they really need to do this dramatic overhaul? But, I think the short answer is yes, but then the question becomes where and how will we see it get much better? What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I think this regime has made it perfectly clear that to compete and succeed defensively in today's NFL, you need to be able to rush the passer. They set that as their priority right from the very start. Then they went out and backed it up and completely overhauled this defensive front and added a bunch of pass rushers. And I think it's pretty remarkable that you can change it that quickly. and, you know, completely changed the philosophy of a defense. If you look at the previous defense, it was built to basically try to stop the run more than anything and, you know, more so to react to things. This is an aggressive attacking defense, and they accomplished it overnight. And I think that you will see, you know, just successful attacking right from the start, and they will need it with these quarterbacks they're going to face this year.
And I think that's the fascinating part about this is you said it. Overnight, this was changed. Most of our faith in how different this will be, how much better we think it'll be, is based on who's been brought in and what they can do. But watching off-season workouts, watching all those OTAs and the minicamp, you really can't conclude anything and say, yep, look how great this defense is going to look here. It's just watching people move around and watching what kind of athletes they have. But, I mean, on that basis, what do we see? I guess we see more speed, right? We see ranginess. We see athletic talent. A lot said about Jabal Sheard and his transition to outside linebacker. All of those things seem to look pretty positive right now.
Yeah, I would say so. I think that when I talked to Brian Baker, the outside linebackers coach, he was really, really excited about Jabal Sheard. I think there was some speculation in the offseason, hey, what do you do with Jabal if you, you know, you get a Paul Kruger and, you know, you try to move him to outside linebacker and then you draft a Barkevious Mingo. But they are very excited about Jabal Sheard and his ability to rush the passer. So I think that's going to be an interesting position to look at because obviously you've got Barkevious that's ready to step in there and, you know, light it up. So I think they have some good options. And right now, when I asked Brian Baker, you know, about Barkevious not being in the starting lineup but being behind Jabal right now, he said, hey, the other two guys are better right now. That's why. So I think that that was, you know, that was a pretty bold statement when you're talking about your number one pick, but that gives Barkevious something to really work for. And I just talked to him at the youth camp today.
Right.
And he, you know, he's very excited, obviously, about his role in this defense. And he said he thinks that this can be the best defense in the NFL. So another bold statement. But when you look at the talent across the board, if they rush the passer the way I think they can, I think this is going to be a really good defense.
And when people talk about, you know, could you have left well enough alone? Could you have just stayed with what you were doing with Dick Duran or that type of scheme, that 4-3, and you didn't have to make this radical switch over to a 3-4? A lot of that is said because of a perception that the defensive line was really strong or strong enough and potentially getting much stronger because of the youth in that group, because of the Phil Taylors and the Billy Wins and the John Hugheses all eventually doing better in their respective roles. How do you come down on the idea that, you know, you had that skill level in a 4-3, and then the obviously open-ended question is how those linemen are going to factor in and be strong contributors now to the 3-4, or will they? Because in a 3-4, the line is less emphasized.
Well, you know what? I think when you look at the Joe Flaccos and the Aaron Rodgers and all of these quarterbacks, the Ben Roethlisbergers that they're going to be facing, you have to have an answer for some of those, for all of those guys. And again, in today's NFL, it's pass, pass, pass first. And the previous defense really just was not built to disrupt the passer. Even Jabal was having a hard time getting freed up because there weren't enough other pass rushers to take attention away from that offense. So, you know, people can say that it was a solid defense. And when you look statistically at the numbers, it wasn't even as solid that way as, you know, as you would have hoped. I mean,
no.
I think you could see progress, but I mean, they were in the 20s. You know, that's, it's not like this was a top, you know, five defense against the run. This was a defense, built for, you know, I think maybe the thinking was, you know, for an AFC North type of, you know, type of football games that you're going to have in November and December. But the truth of the matter is Joe Flacco is going to be flinging it all over the place, and so is every other quarterback that they're going to face this year. And now they have an answer for that. They didn't before, and they were not headed in that direction to compete in today's NFL.
No, they absolutely were not, and I think you nailed it. I mean, in terms of perception versus reality, in terms of where this defense was, just for the record, it was 23rd in overall defense last season. The Browns were ranked 25th against the pass. So that's allowing a lot of big plays. And then as far as the job against the run, 19th against the run. I mean, these aren't the numbers that you could sit there and say, well, they just have to do a little tweaking. No, I think those are the kind of numbers that speak to needing an overhaul, and that's exactly what this team has been given.
And not only that, I mean, when you look at the way that they will be able to disrupt the passer, you're going to get a lot more interceptions out of guys like Joe Hayden. There's a lot of athletic guys on this defense. I think you'll see some big plays from a Craig Robertson. These guys can get their hands on the ball. They're young. They're energetic. And with the things that you have going on up front now, I think you'll see a lot better play in the back end. I think, you know, you might see some increased play from T.J. Ward, you know, maybe getting some more turnovers and things like that. So I think you'll see a lot of takeaways. I think you'll see a lot of sacks. And I think it's a defense that Browns fans have watched other teams like the Steelers and the Ravens come in here and beat up on the Browns, and now the Browns are going to be doing some of that beating up.
Yeah, no, well put. Mary Kay, thank you so much for this thorough breakdown and discussion on the Browns' defensive side of the ball, and we look forward to talking with you down the line.
Sounds great, Vic.
Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Joe Reedy covers the Cincinnati Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer. And Joe, the first place I want to start with you is the announcement that the Bengals are going to be the subject of the Hard Knocks series on HBO this summer. They're going to have the cameras from NFL Films follow them through training camp. This is the second time for the Bengals, the first coming not that long ago, 2009. Is a little surprising that NFL Films, even though they've done multiple teams on this series, that they went back to the Bengals so quickly.
Yeah, I think a little bit, but just talking to the folks at NFL Films yesterday, when they took a look at the roster, it's actually almost a new team. You got 13 guys who are still around from 2009, but you consider the offense is almost entirely new. Defense, there's some guys who have emerged compared to 2009. You got a new offensive coordinator compared to the first time they were there. So it's really, in terms of personalities and stuff, a new roster. And also, let's face it, with Hard Knocks, the past couple years, I think partially with the passing of Steve Sable, who was the chief salesman of this series, I think it's harder to convince teams and coaches to let cameras in for 6 weeks to do it. It's immensely popular with fans and players, but for coaches and organizations who like to kind of keep things quiet and on an even keel during training camp, it takes a lot to convince them. But this is Marvin's third go around for it, and he thought that the roster was mature enough to handle it.
And counting, yeah, you said Marvin Lewis, the head coach, his third go around, the first being when he was defensive coordinator with the Baltimore Ravens, right? And then with Brian Billick. So from his standpoint, he has that sense exactly of what this is all about, and he clearly believes it's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think the one thing, too, just Brian did an interview on NFL Network last night just for reactions about it, and I think Marvin feels the same way, that when you got the cameras following you around all the time and you got the cameras fixated on each practice from NFL Films, that competition level is going to be sky high. And I think it was going to be one of the most competitive training camps for roster spots coming in, but you really can't have an off day when the cameras are focusing on you all the time. And also in the meeting rooms, too, you got to be on point at all times. So I think this team knows that it's a crucial year, and the fact that these cameras are going to be here for 6 weeks even shows more of that.
Let's talk just a little bit about this Bengals team, though, Joe, and where you sort of see things we're in this period now heading into training camp, or at least that gap of about a month and a half before camp, the state of the team and your biggest takeaways from the offseason.
I think that all the starters on offense are back, which is a good thing. I think not only is it a crucial year for Andy Dalton, but also Jay Gruden as well. This offense, since finishing in the top 10 in 2007, and granted it was with a different offensive coordinator, has failed to finish above 20th for five straight years. And granted, about three of those years was a different offensive coordinator, but there really needs to be more consistency. I think we saw in the first Browns game last year when these two teams faced each other in week two, the big plays, the prolific type offense. And then in that game in Cleveland a couple weeks later, we kind of saw the offense how it was in October and December, where it couldn't really generate anything consistently. And, you know, there were problems with the interceptions and the pick sixes and the turnovers, that type of stuff. It needs more consistency. I think adding Tyler Eifert is going to add a lot, not only in two tight ends, but you can line him up in basically any receiving spot. I think Giovanni Bernard gives this running game a quick pace and also able to catch the ball out of the backfield that really this team hasn't had since Marvin's been here.
Right.
And the defense, I think safety's still a question mark. Who's going to start opposite Reggie Nelson, and, you know, a cornerback after the top three. There's a lot of youth there, but the linebackers adding James Harrison is going to give them a nasty edge. This defensive line is one of the tops in the league. Really, everything sets up well for them, but that first 5 weeks, you got home games against Pittsburgh, Green Bay, and New England, and then you got to go on the road to Chicago and Cleveland. There's really, the first 5 weeks, this team's going to have to get out of the gates pretty quick.
Yep. Yeah, it's so true with a lot of teams, but that's a great point. Joe, appreciate you taking the time for us, and obviously I'm looking forward to watching Hard Knocks this summer, and I'm hoping to see some Joe Reedy scenes in there with you quizzing the head coach and different players. I know you're going to be on there.
Well, I'm hoping to get more than 8 seconds than I did in the series the first time, but it'll be interesting, especially with camp in downtown Cincinnati compared to Georgetown 4 years ago. I think it'll bring more fans out this time, which is good.
Great. Well, have fun with that, and please enjoy your summer until we all start buckling down for camp.
No problem. Thanks again.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Frank Minifield is a former standout cornerback for the Cleveland Browns. And Frank, a lot we can cover with you, but let's start with this. You are a member of the board of the Blanton Collier Sportsmanship Group. And, of course, this is a very interesting tie because you're from Kentucky. You played for the Browns. Blanton Collier from Kentucky and, of course, coached the Browns, coached their last championship team. And there's an event coming up, the Kentucky Pro Football Hall of Fame, which you're a member of, and the Blanton Collier Award Ceremony is going to be held on Friday, June 28th in Louisville. And so the timing of all this is great because you're heavily involved in that. But I want to start with the point of your learning and knowing about Collier, because your arrival to the Browns as a player came obviously at a point. I mean, he passed away in 1983, and you started your career with the Browns as a player on this team in 1984, and you never really got to meet the man, but you certainly got to know his legacy.
Yes, I've had opportunity to learn a whole lot about Blanton. The first opportunity that I had actually came while I was playing for the Cleveland Browns. I was sitting on the airplane getting ready to go to an away site to play. And I think Kevin Burns came through and he was giving everybody a book. And I think the book was called The Little Giant, and it was about Blanton Collier. And so that was the first time I was really kind of introduced. I did read a whole lot of the book, didn't read it all. Reading some of the things that was interesting to me as far as, you know, him being from Paris, Kentucky, him coaching the Kentucky Wildcats. I read a lot of those things that I recognized then. So after that, after I retired, I ran into the Blanton Collier family in Central Kentucky, and so the rest of it has been a little bit of history because ever since then we've been working towards this Blanton Collier Award.
Right. Frank Minifield, former Browns cornerback, joining us.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff, Frank. And again, I know you pay close attention to all that's going on with this Browns team. You know that they drafted a cornerback named Leon McFadden in the third round, and they're really trying to fill that void opposite Joe Hayden, and it's not an easy task to do. Your thoughts on just what you've seen of this team so far, and maybe what you know a little bit about maybe McFadden. And I know you watched Buster Skrine in the time that he was trying to fill in for Hayden, and he's very much in the competition to try to win that job this summer at training camp.
Well, I have paid a whole lot of attention to the NFL over the last few years. There for a while, I kind of dropped it. But now my son is at in the Washington Redskins camp, was on their injury reserve team last year. And so I have paid a whole lot of attention to the cornerback position because he plays cornerback also for the Washington Redskins. And so, you know, the one thing that really comes to mind is just how tough it is to play cornerback in the NFL in 2013, 2014. That's what really comes to mind, because when I played, when me and Heifer played, we were allowed to do almost anything we wanted to do to keep the guy from catching the football.
Right.
To a certain extent. We couldn't bite him. We couldn't put him in a headlock. But everything else was legal. And now it's almost totally opposite. These guys are not allowed to put their hands on him for the most part, not allowed to even accidentally bump into him. And God forbid, if your leg get tangled up and somebody falls to the ground, that's an automatic against the guys. So I really kind of have a real soft spot for the guys that's trying to play the position now, because I understand and I see it firsthand on a weekly basis every week. I mean, if there's not a week to go by, that I probably don't throw my head against the floor and say, I can't believe the referee made that call. and the two-hand touch that we have on the quarterback now makes it even more difficult, because you're not allowed to hit the quarterback, so the quarterback's going to stand there and he's going to stand tall. He's going to throw a good, pretty good pass. And, you know, during the years when we played, at least we had that little bit of fear in the quarterback's mind that he might get hit before he threw the football.
Right.
And so that took away some of the accuracy. But, I mean, you know, I think that the young man that they drafted has all the tools to be successful. God knows that you got to have two good cornerbacks and a quarterback to be successful in this league.
And we thank you, Frank, so much for joining us today.
Hey, I appreciate you having me, Vic.
I'm Vic Carucci, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. I want to remind you to catch us at the same time next Saturday morning, and don't forget to follow me on Twitter at VICCARUCCI, and check out my blog, Carucci's Call, presented by Revel Wireless, throughout the week on ClevelandBrowns.com.